Now here's Ask the Expert host, Jesse Fries.
Welcome to Ask the Expert on WMTR 1250 AM, a Beasley Media Group station, streaming live on WMTRAM.com and TalkStreamLive.com. I'm Jesse Fries. Julie Briggs and I host the award-winning Your New Jersey Connection and Ask the Expert, the longest-running ahead-of-the-curve talk shows on the station and in the state. Every year, millions of people divorce, and the number is growing. Half of all American marriages end in divorce, yet the entire process continues to be baffling for so many, and in court, battles erupt. Divorce is a traumatic experience for anyone to go through and can be difficult both emotionally and legally. Joining me this morning, Geraldine Lawrence, the managing member and founder of Lawrence Law Divorce and Family Attorneys in Watchung, New Jersey. Certified by the Supreme Court of New Jersey as a matrimonial law attorney, she represents clients with matrimonial and family law needs, including divorce, litigation, mediation, and arbitration, custody and child support, property settlement, and more. Geraldine is president-elect of NJSBA and is slated to become president in 2022. She is president of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, New Jersey chapter, board member of the Robin Wood Johnson Somerset Healthcare Board of Trustees. She was selected by the Women's Political Caucus of New Jersey to receive the Carol Murphy Award, among many other numerous awards. The New Jersey Professional Lawyers of the Year Award, and honored by the Jersey Business as one of New Jersey's best 50 Women in Business Award. Geraldine was named a finalist as a Lawyer of the Year in 2015 and 2019, and is one of New Jersey's super lawyers in the family law section. She has been named one of the 10 best attorneys in the state of New Jersey. Her honors could go on and on, but it would take the entire show. Geraldine received her J.D. summa cum laude, graduated second in her class from Seton Hall University School of Law, and her B.A. from Kane University. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show this morning, Geraldine Lawrence.
Thank you, Jesse. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Well, you certainly deserve it. Geraldine, how important is it in seeking a divorce lawyer to find someone who has a masterful command of New Jersey state family law?
Jesse, I would say that's critically important. The first hour that a client spends with me, that initial consultation, is probably our most important time together. During that initial meeting, we talk about what their goals are, what their wishes are, and I ask each and every client, where do they want to be in a year? And so that's why we can map out and try to strategize to try to get them to a better place. And it's important to work with somebody that specializes in divorce and family law. In the old days, you would have attorneys that were jacks of all trades and masters of none. And
right.
I think our practice, and I think the law has evolved now, where almost most lawyers are specializing in an area and becoming really good at that one practice area. And that's absolutely true for divorce and family law. A divorce can touch so many other areas of the law. It can touch real estate. It can touch corporation and bankruptcy work. It can touch immigration. It can touch taxation and trusts. So you really need somebody that is specializing in that craft, paying a lot of attention on a daily basis as to trends and what's happening, so that you can make sure you get the best settlement and the best resolution.
Right, and there's so many questions to ask you, I don't even know where to begin. But, Geraldine, what would you say is the leading cause of divorce in the United States today?
Well, I think everything that you've always heard, Jesse, about leading causes of divorce really rings true. Certainly starts with a lack of communication, the inability for partners to be able to talk and discuss things that are going on in the marriage, things that are happening that's making them upset, that often leads to bitterness and resentment. Infidelity is also still up there as a leading
center
cause.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
And what is the current rate? Do you have any ideas, the statistics of divorce in the United States today?
I think exactly what you said in your introduction was accurate. I think it's still around half of first marriages are ending in divorce, and second and marriages thereafter the percentages even go a little bit higher.
Except for Betty White, who just passed away, and she was in her third marriage, her ideal marriage.
No, I think exactly what you know, Betty White, I didn't even know she was married three times. I just remember reading, I think when she passed away, her assistant reported that her last words, I think, was her current husband's name, so I didn't realize she was married before that. But in my world, Jesse, I don't count how many times you're married. It's, you know, to me, that's the more the merrier, as long as you're happy.
Absolutely. Very good advice. What is the current divorce rate in the United States today, and what are the legal grounds for divorce in New Jersey, Geraldine?
Well, the top one right now is what's called irreconcilable differences, and that was a big change in the law that I was involved in and many of my colleagues were involved in. When I first started practicing family law, the number one cause of action was something called extreme cruelty. And what we had to do as divorce practitioners is we forced our clients essentially to give us a list of all of the horrible things that their spouse had done to them, because we needed that to be able to file extreme cruelty. And then divorce lawyers around the state said, this is really cruel to be able to make people do this to their spouse and then ask them to be really good co-parents.
Right.
So what we did is we worked with the legislature to change the grounds for divorce, and we added what's called irreconcilable differences. And it's just a kinder, gentler way to divorce. In your complaint, you're simply pleading that there's been irreconcilable differences, that they've been occurring for more than 6 months, and there's no reasonable prospect of reconciliation. So we don't need to now put forth everyone's dirty laundry in that complaint for divorce, which is a public record as to why you want a divorce. And you can simply say, we have differences, we can't seem to fix them, they've been going on for more than 6 months, and there's no prospect for reconciliation. So I think that's the number one ground that people are using when they file. If I have to file under extreme cruelty or adultery or some other fault-based ground, it tells me there's a lot more going on in the case. There could be extreme acts of domestic violence. There's just other things going on that if I would need to choose that cause of action. But 99% of the time we're filing under the kinder, gentler one, the no-fault irreconcilable differences.
And I've heard from a lot of people that the way you conduct divorce is in such a kind way, and you really get to the bottom and the causes and are a great help in the whole advancement of the divorce. What is the difference between divorce mediation and divorce collaboration? Could you just get that out of the way for us?
Sure. So the main goal of any divorce is to reach what's called a marital settlement agreement or a property settlement agreement. You'll hear those words used interchangeably. So that's the goal, to reach that agreement. 97-98% of all people going through a divorce are able to reach that agreement. They're able to sign that contract, and they can get divorced. And now, with the pandemic, most people are getting divorced by mail. You don't even have to go to court. So that's the goal. But there's different paths or processes that you can take to get you to that agreement. Some people go out for a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, and they sketch out their terms on a piece of paper, take it to the lawyer, and the lawyer can draft a marital settlement agreement.
Wow.
Some people are not able to do that, and that becomes a stressful conversation. So we may talk about hiring a lawyer to serve in the role of a mediator. And a mediator is a neutral third party that meets with the parties going through the divorce, and the lawyers may also be part of that, and they are facilitating the conversation between the clients. They go back and forth, and Zoom's been a wonderful platform for that as well. But they go back and forth. We'll talk about that because I love Zoom, but
yes.
They can go back and forth from room to room. You know, when we used to be in person, you would go conference room to conference room. Now Zoom, it's just a click of a button. You can go room to room, and the mediator is really just doing shuffle diplomacy. They're going from room to room, trying to and talking to both sides, listening to hear some commonality, some common ground, trying to build some momentum and reach an agreement. So that's where the parties are hiring a facilitator, a neutral third party, a mediator, and mediating and trying to reach resolution. The mediator then would draft what's called the Memorandum of Understanding. that is not a binding document until the lawyer converts that into that ultimate marital settlement agreement that I had mentioned earlier. So that's one process. Another process is a wonderful process as well, and I love mediation too, is what's called a collaborative divorce. A collaborative divorce is happening across our entire country. It's relatively new to New Jersey, but it's been here for several years. Back in 2014, again, we worked with the legislature to codify collaborative law into our statute. So it's protected legally. The process is confidential. But in that process, in a collaborative process, the parties really have to be committed to settling their case because they sign a contract obligating them to settle their case, which is called the participation agreement. And if you sign a collaborative participation agreement, that means you are committed to settling your case. And in the unfortunate and unlikely event that you're not able to settle your case, your entire team has to get out of your case.
Oh, my goodness.
So if you signed a participation agreement with me as your collaborative attorney and we can't settle your case, then you can no longer have me as your lawyer. You would need to go hire another lawyer. So you say, oh, my goodness, and that's exactly the intent behind it, is it's trying to incentivize people to not take their toys from the sandbox when they get frustrated and maybe things aren't going their way in the negotiation, but to kind of stick with it, figure out why are things not going that way.
How much does it cost today to get divorced? Is it expensive?
It all depends. There are two people that control how much a divorce costs and how long it takes. And those are the parties going through the divorce. So when they're ready to settle and they're ready to reach an agreement on all of their outstanding terms, they can get a divorce. Lawyers do not control how long a divorce takes or how much it costs. I can draft an agreement in 2 weeks. I can have you sign it, get it, file the complaint for divorce, get it back 10 days from the court, and hopefully get you divorced 6 to 8 weeks thereafter.
Unbelievable.
So that's how fast the process can happen, but it takes the parties to be able to agree on very important issues, custody, parenting time, alimony,
so much
equitable
to
distribution.
Agree on. How has the pandemic affected the divorce rate? Have you seen much of a change since the pandemic in people seeking divorce?
Well, when the pandemic first hit back in March of 2020, what we were really seeing was arguments over parenting time. One parent didn't want to send the kids to parenting time because the other parent wasn't adhering to CDC guidelines, wasn't quarantining, wasn't wearing a mask, wasn't doing any of the things that the CDC said. So, and then the other parent was withholding parenting time, and then the other parent was getting upset. So there were a lot of fights in the beginning having to do with parenting time. So we were very, very busy. Divorces, not so much. I mean, I was still doing a lot of consultations, mostly people sitting in their car, you know, because everyone was stuck at home quarantining together, so they really had no free time. They were like running out to the store in their car trying to get a divorce consultation in. But we were predominantly dealing with custody and parenting time issues, and then that morphed to people losing their job. And so we were dealing with changes in circumstance as it pertained to child support or alimony. But really, of late, now it's been very busy with all of those things, plus divorce.
Yeah. And, of course, with the economic situation today, too, that probably plays a part.
It does. It does. But I have to tell you, I mean, I saw this after 9/11, and I'm seeing it after this pandemic. People going through a stressful and traumatic event like 9/11, like living through this pandemic, if we can remember how terrifying it was early on, they see in their partner either really good things or really bad things. And it becomes eye-opening for them. I mean, a lot of the talking heads after 9/11 were saying the divorce rate's going to go down, people are going to see all the suffering that these families are enduring in 9/11, and you know, people are going to stay together. I saw the exact opposite. People took stock in their life and they said, if this can happen to them and life is short and I want to be happy. And that's really the cornerstone of all of us. At the end of the day, we want to be happy and we want to be with people that make us happy. And if you're stuck at home in a pandemic and the other spouse isn't helping with homeschooling, getting the kids ready for the day. I mean, that was very, very taxing on many parents, having to manage work and their kids' schooling. And it really became the straw that broke a lot of marriages back, I think.
Yes, yeah. You're so right. You know, as we said, divorce is a traumatic experience for anyone to go through, especially a child. What steps should be taken to ensure the smoothest changes for a family?
Just keep saying over and over to yourself that you really have to leave the kids out of this. And as unhappy or upset as you are with your spouse, don't take it out on your kids. Don't involve your kids. Don't talk to your kids about your divorce. Don't talk within earshot of the kids about your divorce. No matter what, kids love both of their parents. They always will. It's the best gift that any parent can get, that our kids just love us unconditionally, no matter what we do, generally speaking.
Yeah, but do both parties usually agree to that, or are there some that don't?
Well, you hope so, and you hope that you're part of the process that educates them to do that, because kids don't want to carry the burden of their mom and dad's divorce. If you can speak to your client about that and say, look, you're hurting them. If you're going to talk bad about mom, talk bad about dad in front of the kids, that's as painful as, you know, a smack in their face. And if you can get them to understand that, and most do, most don't want to go out there and hurt their kids, no matter how upset they are, even if there's infidelity. So you have to always bring it back to the kids, that you really want to leave them as stable and as happy as possible post-divorce. And most parents, they want that.
Absolutely. Well, we've got to go on a break, but we're talking to Geraldine Lawrence, managing member and founder of Lawrence Law Divorce and Family Attorneys in Watchung, New Jersey. She's president-elect of NJSBA and slated to become president in 2022, also named as one of New Jersey's best lawyers for families. In addition, she was selected by her peers as one of New Jersey's top 10 matrimonial lawyers under the age of 40. You have many accreditations to your credit. We'll be right back with Geraldine Lawrence.
And now we return to Ask the Expert on AM 1250 Classic Oldies WMTR.
Welcome back. We're talking to Geraldine Lawrence, managing member and founder of Lawrence Law Divorce and Family Attorneys, Watchung, New Jersey, one of the best in New Jersey. Divorce and access to it is still happening, and a lot of it is done through Zoom. Tell us about the use of Zoom in divorce proceedings. Is this something new, and how effective is it, Geraldine?
Perfect. So, one thing for everybody to realize, the courts in New Jersey never closed, not for one day. They were open from the first days of the pandemic continuing to today, so, which was a big relief to many people needing courts intervention or courts assistance. So I was lucky that when I started my firm back in 2018, we had invested in all of the newest technology. So as soon as the pandemic hit, we bought some Zoom licenses, and everything transitioned to online. And that has continued to this day. Meeting clients, mediating with clients, litigation motions are all still happening on Zoom. And the court is still operating almost entirely on Zoom. Domestic violence trials are happening more so in person. Now, this new variant, Omicron, has kind of slowed that down since the end of December, probably through January. But most practitioners would like to see domestic violence trials stay in person. But for the bulk of the pandemic, prior to this recent variant, domestic violence trials were happening on Zoom. Complex matrimonial trials were happening on Zoom. There was a way to share your screen and submit evidence prior to the trial. I think a lot of divorce lawyers would prefer if there's complex matrimonial trials with an abundance of exhibits and forensic accountants and a complicated testimony. We would prefer to be in person, but Zoom has worked on so many levels on so many other case types. The judges are using it. They're using Microsoft Teams, a lot of phone conferences as well. Court stayed open throughout, so that was a good thing for people that needed that access to justice or access to relief.
Is it better not to be in the same room for the couple going through the divorce, and is it easier with child care issues?
I think my clients love Zoom. They're able to see me on their lunch hour. They're able to see me without having to pay for child care. I think it's been very convenient. One of the most stressful things I think for anybody is that whole hurry up and wait.
Yes.
And so that's what we were always seeing in court. Courts would bring in 30 cases a day. And if you weren't the 9 o'clock case, you were likely the 1 o'clock case. So now you're sitting there for hours. Now courts are doing such a great job of scheduling things, incrementally, a 9 o'clock case, a 9:15 case, a 9:30 case. And you can be home, at your kitchen table and dialing up the judge. And your kids can be in the other room, or you haven't missed, much work at all. So it's been extremely client friendly.
Yeah.
So that's been working.
Does it matter who files first in the divorce?
Absolutely not. It does not. Some people don't like being called the plaintiff. Some people don't like being called the defendant, but that's just an optics thing or a personal preference thing. You don't get any more or less if you're the plaintiff or the defendant. One thing I want to talk about when I'm president of the State Bar come May, which is coming up much sooner than I think I'm ready for.
Yes, you
but
are.
But it's going to be here before I know it. It's going to be here in May.
Oh,
one thing I want to talk to the court about is changing that whole structure. I don't know why family court we even have – I don't know why we even have plaintiffs or defendants. Right. When a letter's coming out of my office, particularly in a collaborative case, but, my team is mindful of this in every case. We try to describe it as regarding the marriage of Smith, regarding the marriage of Lawrence, whatever the name is, to talk about it in terms of a family unit or a couple instead of a plaintiff or defendant. It just seems to start the case off on the wrong foot when you're fighting about or worrying about who's the plaintiff or the defendant, when it doesn't mean a thing, who files first. And generally speaking, we don't even file a complaint for divorce until after the agreement is signed. It is the case, it's a rare case where people are fighting and it really matters who files first or you need to get to the court first.
Right.
That's more for TV movies than in reality. That's generally not how a divorce starts. Generally, a divorce starts where the spouses talk and say, look, this isn't working out.
Right.
I'll have my lawyer call your lawyer and we start a conversation, or we're getting into mediation, or the lawyers are talking. It's
right.
A rare case where, people are throwing someone's clothes out the window and, you're rushing to court. That can happen, but that's an aberration.
You know what? I just want to get in this question. How is custody of the child determined in New Jersey? And can a child ever choose between the parents of who they want to live with?
So in New Jersey, we have what's called the best interest of the child standard. So whatever facts and circumstances of that particular family are relevant, speak to whatever the best interests of the child are. So that's always going to be what the court's focus is on. When I first started practicing 25 years ago, and I will stereotype, generally speaking, dads were getting every Wednesday for dinner and every other weekend, Friday to Sunday. That was their parenting time schedule. That's just not the case anymore. If you have an active, involved father that is willing and able to participate in custody and parenting time and wants robust and meaningful parenting time, they're going to get more than what I just described. And moms, but moms and dads, everybody has to be available for their parenting time. They may have to change their work schedule. But the cornerstone of any analysis is what's the best interest of the child, and historically, what was the status quo? What did their schedule look like, and what will the schedule look like going forward? And does that schedule meet their best interest? Generally speaking, kids are not deciding what the parenting time schedule should be unless they're getting up there in age. Courts don't even deal with custody and parenting time issues for kids that are 18. 17-year-olds are pretty much deciding where they're going. 16, getting close to that. 15-year-olds, it's tough. They clearly don't, they're not controlling it, but to say, but they absolutely have a voice in what they want to do.
Very good. I've got to go on this quick break, and then as soon as we get back, we'll be talking a lot more about divorce and custody, who gets the children, the rights of people in separation requirements. I'm Jesse Fries. We're talking to Geraldine Lawrence, managing member and founder of Lawrence Law, Divorce and Family Attorneys, Watchung, New Jersey. We'll be right back.
And now we return to Ask the Expert on AM 1250 Classic Oldies WMTR.
Welcome back. My guest today, Geraldine Lawrence, managing member and founder of Lawrence Law, Divorce and Family Attorneys, Watchung, New Jersey, certified as the Supreme Court of New Jersey as matrimonial law attorney. She represents clients with family law needs, including divorce, litigation, mediation, arbitration, custody and parenting, time issues, alimony, and so much more. And we've got so much to get to today. Is child support ever impacted by the amount of time each parent physically spends time with the child? How do the courts or attorney decide who gets the child the most?
So in New Jersey, we have child support guidelines, and those guidelines, the number one driver of what child support will be is the income of the parents. But certainly the more time the non-custodial parent is spending, the more time they have, the less child support they're paying. So the more overnights that you have, it does correlate in child support that you would pay less child support. But we have child support guidelines. It's a computer program. All the judges have the same software. A lot goes into that calculation, but the number one driver is income of the parties, parenting time, how many overnights are each of the parents having. You could put health insurance in the guidelines. If there's extraordinary extracurricular activities or something like that, you can add that into the guidelines. So it can be a complicated calculation, but it's helpful. It's helpful. There's certainly a rebuttable presumption. If in your individual case the guidelines come in too low, you can certainly advocate for your client and articulate to the court why that number that the guideline is saying is too low and why that may be adjusted. But it's a, we have to use them. We have to look to them. Certainly it's a tool that the judges are using to calculate child support.
And what happens if the main breadwinner loses his or her job and cannot meet the payment required, Geraldine?
So our law, there's a whole body of case law that talks about changes in circumstance. So if you have an agreement that says, for alimony or child support, you have to pay X or Y, and that agreement was predicated on you earning Z, and you can show that you have suffered a permanent, so it can't be temporary, but a permanent substantial change in circumstance, so it's got to be substantial. It can't be, you know, $10 or whatever. You know, it's got to be permanent and substantial. You have a key to the courthouse to be able to say, look, I have a change in circumstance. Now, it can't be something that you've brought on for, to yourself. You can't say, you know, I've agreed to pay X dollars. I'm working at a job in New York City making X dollars, but now I want to go golf in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and now I'm making, you know, a fraction of that, so therefore I'm not going to pay alimony or child support. A court can't allow that kind of abuse and, you know, thumbing one's nose at a court order. So that would not likely meet the court's approval of a change in circumstance. But if you lose your job, you're downsized, or the company goes out of business, and that happened for a period of time, generally more than 3 months, a court would say that's a change in circumstance and would allow you to review your support obligations.
Right. And when it comes to debts, who pays the debts between the couple and the college costs? Talk to us about that.
Equitable distribution is usually the easiest part of my job. I need to do three things there. I need to identify the parties' assets and debts, value them, and divide them. So assets and debts are treated just the same. If they are marital and for marital purposes and acquired during the marriage, they are to be divided. So if somebody is putting on their credit card, groceries, taekwondo classes for the kids, kids activities, those are marital debts that are to be addressed and divided at the time of the divorce. If somebody is having an extramarital affair and funding that affair on that same credit card, the other spouse is going to say, I'm not paying that debt, right? So that's not a marital debt. That debt would be put in the column of the person charging that debt, and they would be solely responsible for that.
Right. And is adultery illegal in New Jersey, and does it matter in divorce case?
It really doesn't. Fault used to really matter. And this is going back even before I started practicing law. Mm-hmm. But from what I hear, a long time ago, adultery, fault used to matter. And all you had to prove, and it usually was harmful to women, all her husband had to show was that the woman had opportunity and inclination to have an affair. Goodness. That's all you had to show. And if he could show that, the woman was not entitled at all to alimony. It was a bar to alimony. So what was happening was women were being supported by the state. And so the state said, this is crazy. And now our public policy has totally swung 180 degrees where now courts really don't care why you're getting divorced. Infidelity doesn't really matter. Again, if something is egregious, courts care about fault. But generally speaking, fault really doesn't play any role in our divorce. It could impact custody and parenting time if you're doing something really not smart with your kids, subjecting your kids to something that shows a real lack of judgment, that absolutely can impact custody and parenting time. But generally speaking, you'll hear judges tell you, you married him, you thought he was a good person, you thought she was a good person. We're not going to get into refereeing fault. We just don't have the capacity to be able to do that. We already are overworked, underpaid, and have huge backlogs, so we're just not going to get into fault unless it's egregious fault.
Wow, New Jersey and the world has really changed. I've been doing this show for years. That is a huge, huge change. We've got to go on a quick break, and my guest today is Geraldine Lawrence, managing member and founder of Lawrence Law, Divorce and Family Attorneys, Watchung, New Jersey. She has so many honors listed to her. We'll be right back with Geraldine Lawrence.
And now we return to Ask the Expert on AM 1250, Classic Oldies, WMTR.
Welcome back. We're talking to Geraldine Lawrence, managing member and founder of Lawrence Law, Divorce and Family Attorneys in Watchung, New Jersey. Geraldine, do you see many cases where one spouse is so bitter or angry at the other that they use the child as a pawn or speak ill of their spouse? And how harmful is this to the whole case?
Unfortunately, I have seen that. That has happened. I try to, I try to educate or enlighten my client that that's not a good thing, that you're hurting your child, the person that you love the most in the world. You are hurting by doing that. If that's happening, I rely very much on the therapeutic process, try to get professional therapists involved as to figure out, what's driving that? How can we best approach that so that that stops from happening? Because kids, they don't want to be involved in this. They love mom and dad, and they just want to be happy. So it does. That can really make a case take the wrong turn and have a lot of litigation, get a lot of child psychologists and experts involved. And it can take a case down a path where it can become very expensive, very prolonged. And if a judge is making a decision, there can be significant consequences to that. You can lose you can be a stay-at-home parent, and if you're found to have abused your child like that, tried to alienate your child, you can lose custody. Can have supervised visits. Mm-hmm. There can be severe consequences if you're able to prove that the other parent is doing that to a child.
Right. And does a parent who is main custody of a child, are they ever allowed to move out of the state?
So our law changed recently, and the Supreme Court came down with an opinion that addressed relocation. And the standard is now best interest of the child, the same standard that I was speaking about earlier with regard to how a court decides custody and parenting time. So it's much harder now in New Jersey to relocate if both parents are active, involved parents. Because it's hard for a court to say, oh, it's in the child's best interest to be moved out of state and away from a parent.
Right.
So it's become harder to do that. But if you have a parent that's absent, inactive, it has become easier to relocate because it's in the best interest of the child to do that. And the age of a child can impact that as well. If you have an older child that can opine as to where they want to live, courts are paying attention to that.
Well, that's good. That's changed years ago, too. What happens if one parent wants a child? Let's look at the parenting issues. If one parent wants a child to be vaccinated and the other disagrees, or one thinks they should be wearing a mask and the other disagrees, how do they settle little disputes such as that?
Well, that's a hot-button item right now.
Certainly.
And it's been anything but a little dispute. It's probably I get a phone call a day about this right now. So most parents share what's called joint legal custody, meaning both parents have equal say in major decisions affecting the kid's health, education, safety, welfare. And under that umbrella for joint legal custody are medical decisions. And do they get vaccinated or not?
Right.
And almost all parties or parents are aligned with what they want their child to receive or not receive. But with this COVID vaccine, there is a lot of friction with parents. If the parents agree, I don't ever hear from them. But if I hear from the ones where they can't agree and one wants them vaccinated or one doesn't want them vaccinated. In New Jersey, we do not have a reported decision on it just yet. From what everything that I'm hearing, courts are, they want to have a trial on it, and then they will render a decision. New York has issued a decision where if the parents disagree as to having the vaccine, the court ordered the child to be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that that's where New Jersey is going to come down. If a parent has testimony from the child's pediatrician that they are recommended that the child be vaccinated, I think a court is going to compel the objecting parent to cooperate with the vaccine, although there's no reported case on it just yet. I just think that that's where we're going to land.
Well, that's good. But what about spoiling? If one parent wants to really get in with the child and lets them stay up late and does all the wrong things for them and it's already been decided, is there any recourse the other parent has?
Well, we hear that a lot. We call them Disneyland parents. They change their ways post-divorce. And, one household has all the rules. There's discipline. You have to do schoolwork. You have to have a curfew. You have to put your phone away at a certain time. And then there's another household where there are no rules. And it's, playtime, party time all the time. I can just tell you that if that's the household where there are no rules, that's going to catch up with that parent because school is going to be impacted. Attendance lists will bear that out. If a child is tardy all the time or if you're always getting notes from the teacher on the days following the parent that's not running, a reasonable household at home. And a court's going to pay attention to that. Courts do not want to see absences. They do not want to see tardies. And that sticks out like a red flag on a report card, five tardies, six tardies. And when you drill down on that and map that out on a calendar that was always following mom's time or always following dad's time, a court's going to pay attention to that. And they can change your parenting time schedule.
Well, that's very good, and that is helpful. When we get back, we've got to go on a quick break. We're going to talk about alimony after and during the divorce. Alimony can be very messy and very complicated, especially when it comes to money. And we're going to find out from Gerald and Lawrence, how is New Jersey alimony calculated? I'm Jesse Fries. We'll be right back with Gerald and Lawrence.
And now we return to Ask the Expert on AM 1250 Classic Oldies WMTR.
Welcome back. We've got so much more to ask you and only 8 minutes left of this show. My guest today is Gerald Lawrence, managing member and founder of Lawrence Law, Divorce and Family Attorneys, Watchung, New Jersey. He's been certified by the Supreme Court of New Jersey as a matrimony law attorney and a very good one at that. After and during the divorce, alimony can be messy, as we say. How is New Jersey alimony calculated, and does the length of the marriage matter?
So as I said earlier, equitable distribution is generally the easiest part of my job. Alimony is generally the hardest part of my job. Alimony, in New Jersey, we have statutory factors, a host of factors that the court is to look at when trying to determine alimony. And it's the needs of the person seeking alimony. It's the needs of the person who's at risk of paying alimony. It's the ability of the person seeking alimony, their ability to contribute to their own needs. You look at marital lifestyle, and there's a host of other statutory factors that you look at. But the goal is for both parties to be able to, post-divorce, live a reasonably comparable marital lifestyle. But the devil's in the details, and the devil's trying to figure that out. It is hard enough, in New Jersey particularly, to try to live and maintain a household. And that just is compounded exponentially when now in a divorce, you're trying to maintain two households when it could have been a challenge to maintain one.
Absolutely.
So everybody has to do a budget. Most people have to cut things out of their budget. They have to really tighten things up so that everybody can, both households can make things and make ends meet.
Well,
so
I want to know, though, how assets are split, though. If a spouse inherits family money while married, does that count in divorce proceedings? How do we divide the money and the assets?
Well, so if you inherit money, no, that is not subject to equitable distribution. So if you inherit money and you keep it separate, that is your money. But if you inherit, say you inherit $1 million, and you put that $1 million in the bank account, if you inherit $1 million, you don't have to share that $1 million with your spouse, but what your spouse is going to argue when you're talking about alimony and child support, that $1 million in the bank account is going to generate, even at 4% interest, $40,000 a year in income. They're going to argue that $40,000 be added to your income. So while it may not be relevant for equitable distribution, it can be relevant for when you're trying to calculate one party's income. Let me just get back to your earlier question. I think I tried to address the amount of alimony, and that's really budgeting and lifestyle.
Yeah.
The duration of alimony, when we passed the alimony reform, we changed the alimony statute back in 2014, and what we put in there were some alimony guidelines.
As to
duration. And what the statute now talks about is alimony, unless there's some exceptional circumstance, and there could be, alimony is not to exceed the length of the marriage for marriages under 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a 10-year marriage, alimony is generally not to exceed 10 years. If you have a 2-year marriage, alimony is generally not to exceed 2 years. Where we get to a little harder issue is if you have a 19-year marriage. Technically speaking, that's less than 20, but the facts and circumstances are going to dictate what that term of alimony looks like. So our statute now gives us some guidance as to duration.
And how about property division? How is property divided? And if one partner is paying for most of the bills?
Well, no. So in New Jersey, we have equitable distribution. It doesn't mean equal, but ordinarily it is, particularly in longer marriages, but it's got to be equitable. And in New Jersey, the philosophy is marriage is a partnership. So if one party was staying home, taking care of kids, taking care of the household, and the other party was working and paying bills, although they may say, look, I earned it or it's in my name, that doesn't much matter. That's not dispositive of the issue. What you have to look at is at the marriage holistically. What was each partner's contribution to the marriage? And then you look at the assets that were acquired during the marriage and you divide them equitably. But generally speaking, that's equally, unless there's reasons not to. And you can certainly articulate what that is. And if it's fair for it not to be 50-50, then it's your burden of proof as to why that would be.
And I've heard that New Jersey courts, though, do not follow any formula in calculating alimony. Is that true? So it doesn't factor down then to the length of marriage, age, health, income of each spouse, or does it?
It does. We do not have alimony guidelines. We do not. There was talk about that many years ago, but we were able to make sure that that didn't come to New Jersey. That would not be good for New Jersey. So we do not have alimony guidelines as to the amount. We do have some parameters as to the duration, but not as to the amount. The amount, you have to look at a bunch of statutory factors, each party's needs, ability to pay, ability to contribute to your own needs. So that's how alimony is calculated in New Jersey.
And I only have 2 minutes left, but very quickly, what happens if couples so dispute issues such as custody, visitation, and parenting plans? Does your firm assist in solutions for these issues?
This is all that we do. We focus on one area of the law. We specialize in only divorce and family law issues. People going through a divorce or people that have never gotten married but have children or support issues. So that is all that we do, is try to help families or couples or parents in need, trying to restructure their relationship or their arrangement and try to move them to the next phase of their journey as best as we can.
Now, if anyone is facing a divorce today, Geraldine Lawrence, how can they get in touch with you and your law firm?
So you can look us up on the web. It's www.lawlawfirm.com. So law is twice, lawlawfirm.com. You can just Google me. I think you would pop up Geraldine Lawrence, or our phone number is 908-645-1000.
Well, we want to thank you, Geraldine Lawrence, for a most informative and enlightening interview, founder of Lawrence Law and Family Divorce Attorneys in Watchung, New Jersey. And we want to thank you for your recent sponsorship of our Person of the Week, because there's certainly so many people to be honored in New Jersey. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you this morning, Geraldine Lawrence.
Thank you so much, Jesse. I had a nice time talking to you as well.
Thank you. Stay tuned for Julie Briggs and her riveting political roundtable coming up next. Have a good day. Good day.